Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Our guest today is St. Louis Circuit Court Judge Jimmy Edwards. He'll be sworn in next week as the city's public safety director. He'll run the city's largest department, managing 3,500 employees, including the police and fire departments, and a $340 million budget. He takes the position in what is being called a troubled time for the city. Judge Jimmy Edwards joins me in studio. Judge, great to see you. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much, Don. I'm very happy to be here at St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you for the opportunity.
We're happy to have you. Do you agree with the impression that the city is going through a very troubled period right now?
Well, I certainly think that our city has some issues. There are trust gaps between police and citizens. There are some other issues that we have to address in corrections. But I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the fact that we have a really good police department. I'm not naive enough to believe that we don't have some issues, but we have a great police department.
Do you think, just jumping ahead a little bit, do you think that any police officers should be disciplined for their activities during the early part of these protests? I'm thinking some of the issues downtown and other sites.
Well, certainly I haven't had an opportunity to review any specific police file, but I do expect that police officers ought to always be respectful. They ought to always be kind. We certainly expect them to do their jobs. But one of the major issues with, I believe, some police officers are, they're a little bit aggressive, and not they don't necessarily police equitably in all parts of our city.
What kind of a role would the public safety director have in dealing with issues like this, with dealing with overzealous policing?
Well, certainly I think that the public safety director has an opportunity to suggest policy and to have expectations that our officers and all of our departments understand that they belong to the citizens of the city of St. Louis, and they must act accordingly. And we have to be transparent, and we have to be accountable.
You're going to be playing a role in the selection of a new police chief. As a matter of fact, I saw Mayor Crewson quoted as saying that that selection process actually belongs to you, would belong to you as public safety director.
Yes, under the charter requires the public safety director to select the police chief. I certainly will consult very carefully with our mayor. She is the mayor. She's the chief executive of our city. But ultimately, that decision lies with me, and I hope to be very vigilant in terms of trying to find somebody decent.
Where are we in that process now? Do you know?
Well, I can tell you that I would like to have a police chief in place before the end of the year. I expect to get the six finalists files, if you will, by or before December the 15th. And after December the 15th, I will go to work to try to select someone to serve as our next police chief.
What specifically would you be looking for in the next chief?
Well, certainly I'm looking for someone who is familiar with our city, someone who is culturally competent, someone who understands their own internal biases, and someone that has the ability to earn the respect of the rank and file.
I had an interesting conversation with Representative Bruce Franks a couple of weeks ago, and he was very, very interested and really quite adamant about having a homegrown chief, someone who understands the community and understands what St. Louis really is, that would be a great benefit. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I'm very interested in finding the most qualified and the best chief. So if that chief happens to be someone that is not homegrown but has the ability to understand the culture and has the ability to get in, work real hard and meet the folk that are in our city, the folk that they will be responsible for serving, protecting, then that's the person that we want. We want the absolute best person for the job.
But he does make a point, doesn't he, that having someone who is really – who comes in and can hit the ground running because he knows the community rather than having to wait out a learning process of some sort.
Well, certainly knowing the community, I think, is a benefit, but it can also be a curse as well. So we have to look and find someone that has the ability to police. My big concern and what I see as being the biggest trust gap is the inability to police equitably in all parts of our city. And so if we can have equitable treatment and we can have good policing, a respect for the folk that are that reside in our city, that visit our city, that plan our city, those are the qualities that I'm very interested in.
How would a homegrown chief be a curse?
Well, I think that if you already have issues with certain parts of our city, you already have an opinion with respect to how people should be treated or how people have been treated, I think that that cannot be good.
You know, I think most people think that being a judge is a pretty good job. I'm curious as to why you would want to give up that good job for one that's going to be considerably tougher, I would suspect.
Well, being a judge is a fantastic job. I've been a judge for 25 years. I've seen the worst in our city, and I certainly have seen the best in our city. When I was asked by the mayor if I would consider this job, I indicated very clearly to her that I appreciated her ask. I certainly respect her. And then I thought very carefully and very deeply how much I love our city. Mm. And so because I love our city, I'm willing to take the challenge. I, too, am homegrown. And certainly I think that being homegrown, in my case, is certainly a benefit because I've had an opportunity to look at all sides of our city and to be engaged for the last 25 years. So the only thing that I've known for the last 25 years is doing the right thing all the time. Mm. And that's what I expect our officers to do.
Do you think that had you been public safety director at the time of the Stockley verdict, that you would have looked at that verdict any differently than you might as a judge?
Well, certainly I don't want to go back and revisit that verdict.
But it is dictating a lot of what's going on in our community today.
It is certainly dictating a lot of what's going on in our city today. And I think one of the biggest issues with the verdict is that it took too long to get the verdict. I'm a veteran judge. And so I rule in 28 minutes and not 28 days. Mm-hmm. And so I think that unfortunately led to a lot of the unrest. But I don't know the very specific facts. I know what I've read. I certainly understand that judges have a great deal of discretion. And so you can put 10 judges in a room together with the exact same facts and get 10 different outcomes.
I wonder if you think, as some people do, that he should not have been charged with first-degree murder. They might have gotten a conviction otherwise.
Well, you know, strategically, that may have been the case. But as I read the verdict, once the judge decided that it was a self-defense, it took murder first off the table. It took murder second off the table. And it took all of the manslaughters off the table once the judge made a determination that it was in self-defense. And so that's something that was within the judge's discretion. That's what he did. I don't know whether I would have had the same ruling. Mm-hmm.
Of course, the verdict, as we've indicated, led to ongoing protests. And I say ongoing because there's no indication that they're not going to live up to what they said they were going to do and just continue them. What do you make of these protests? Do you think they're effective? Do you think that they are something that can affect change?
Well, I'm one that likes a good revolution. So protests, they don't necessarily bother me. We all have a constitutional right to protest and to voice our opinions. What I do disagree with, however, is when protest turns into criminal activity. And when you're hurting folk or you're destroying property, then you're no longer engaging in your constitutional right to protest. Now you're engaging in criminal activity. And so a good revolution, yes, because revolutions tend to change things for the better.
Mm. Well, there has been some violence, but I think many people would say that much of the violence, if not most of it, has come from the authorities, from the police.
Well, I'm not going to admit that. I just don't know. I do know that based upon some reports, some police officers have been, to too aggressive. Some have done things perhaps that they should not do. But those are the police officers that I think that we in City Hall will have to be transparent about. Mm-hmm. And these officers should not be on the force. Mm-hmm. And so what it does is for the 95% of the officers that are doing the right thing, I think that 5% hurts.
If such officers were identified, would you as public safety director have the authority to remove them from the force?
Well, I certainly think that I would have the authority to have a conversation with the chief, have a conversation with those folk that are in internal affairs, and that those officers should, in fact, be removed. No one should violate anyone's right under the color of state authority.
As a man who likes a good revolution, what advice do you have for these protesters?
Well, I think that we're listening. We hear you loud and clear. In fact, I was so interested in hearing what they had to say. I invited them to my courtroom. Come to my courtroom and you tell me how or what do we need to do to improve the trust and confidence, not only in the court system, but the trust and confidence in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And much to my happiness, they were very articulate. They came in, and we have prepared a 98-page transcript, which has been now shared with every single judge in the state of Missouri. Mm-hmm.
And give me some sense of what's in this 98 pages.
Well, certainly the trust and confidence as it relates to courts. One solution is to address the bail issue, the bail bond issue. Another certainly is to address how we render orders. You see, words matter. And judges should only rule on facts that have been proven and never engage in assumptions. For example, urban drug dealers. Well, that's an assumption, and we should never, ever do that. With respect to police officers, just simply being kind, understanding who they work for, understanding where they work. Every now and then, you see, you have to get out of your car and you have to meet people, the same folk that are paying you your salary. I do think police officers should be paid. They should be paid a lot of money. So this is an opportunity for me to tell you that I support Proposition P.
Really? What a surprise. No, I certainly wanted to get to that. And this is a very controversial. Again, we go back to the protests because the people who oppose it are basically saying, you know, why do we want to reward people who have been a problem to certain parts of the community?
Well, Dan, this is a great opportunity for me to give you my thoughts on that. I think that Proposition P is important to poor people and to marginalized communities. With Proposition P comes an opportunity to pay officers, good officers. You see, if we don't have Proposition P and we don't have the funds to adequately pay police officers, we're going to get what we pay for. We will have police officers. But those folk that are more affluent in certain communities in the city of St. Louis, they are not only have the benefit of good police officers in their communities, they're paying additionally for overtime. But folk that are in marginalized communities, people that are in primarily African-American communities, they barely have equitable policing. They don't have the same numbers of policing. And so the impact of Proposition P, or the impact of Proposition P not passing, means that those same communities that the protesters are so concerned about will suffer the most.
I'm going to take this moment to point out that we're going to be having a discussion on Proposition P tomorrow with Mayor Lyda Crewson and City Treasurer Tashara Jones, and we'll continue this part of the conversation tomorrow. We're talking with Judge Jimmy Edwards of St. Louis Circuit Court. He is going to become the new public safety director effective next week. He'll be sworn in on Monday, I believe. We'll continue our conversation with the judge in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Judge Jimmy Edwards, the soon-to-be new public safety director in the city of St. Louis, in just a moment. But first, several faith, business, and civic leaders in St. Louis, angered by the treatment of black people, are launching an economic boycott campaign. The Reverend Dinah Tatman is organizing the effort and says African Americans are subjected to excessive force by police, by criminalization, and by harsh sentencing. This boycott, is that something that you would support?
Well, certainly. I don't support necessarily boycotts. I understand when protests or protesters are engaged in economic type of protest to make a point. But when we engage in these type of economic boycotts, they tend to have unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. They hurt sometimes the very people that you're saying that you want to help.
Yeah, a lot of the people doing the protesting do suffer, but jobs are lost, and they may be their jobs, and that's part of this whole process.
Yes.
Yeah. You mentioned bail a little while ago, and the city just recently has pledged that, like most people, that most people charged with municipal offenses can now go home without having to pay bail.
I think that is a great idea. I think if you took a look at the data and you look at the history of defendants that have been charged with crimes, not only in the city of St. Louis, but the entire state of Missouri. Most defendants show up for court. The purpose of bail under the Constitution is simply to ensure that defendants will return to court when given a court date. The defendants in our area, irrespective of the crime or crimes that they're charged with, tend to always show up.
Yeah. We have an email here from Jefferson County. Thomas writes, should the city of St. Louis leaders keep repeating the statement that the high violent crime stats for the city are misleading and irrelevant because they are not combined and averaged with the lower violent crime statistics for St. Louis County? Or should city of St. Louis leaders be held accountable for making the city a safer place to live, work, and play as the county?
Well, let me start with the latter. Yeah. I think that we all should be accountable. I intend to be very accountable and very transparent with respect to all of the issues in all of the departments under the auspices of the public safety director. With respect to crime stats, those crime stats are oftentimes skewed. You can take a statistic and you can turn it into a negative. You can turn it into a positive. And so while I understand and appreciate the concern of the listener from Jefferson County, I'm not sure that I necessarily agree. I think that we have to be transparent.
What exactly is your portfolio as public safety director? We've talked a lot about police and the protests, but it goes beyond that. We haven't mentioned firefighters, and they're an important part of the public safety realm.
You know, I can tell you that the fire department has been awfully quiet. So I think the position of the chief in the fire department is, well, we don't have any issues right now, so we're going to be quiet and we'll meet the judge on Monday. The same with the building inspectors, the same with the corrections folk. As you indicated, there are a lot of employees under the umbrella of public safety. I think our city is in relatively good shape.
You do? In what regard? I mean, financially, it's not in great shape.
Well,
but we
in
have
terms
protests,
of public safety, yeah, in terms yeah. of in terms of public safety, yeah. You know, we certainly welcome protesters. You know, and I said at the outset, I welcome a good revolution. I mean, the protesting brings to light the opportunity to make changes.
Have any changes resulted from the several weeks of protests that we've had now?
I certainly think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have invited protesters to the courtroom. Yeah. We're making changes with respect to certain policies as we speak. I think certainly the mayor is very, very concerned with positive change. She's certainly concerned with closing the trust gap between all of the city agencies and the general public.
Mm-hmm. Let's change subject a little bit and talk about the work that you've been doing with young people. What happens to that work now? I mean, obviously, you're leaving the bench where much of that work was done. What happens now?
I will continue that work. Innovative Concept Academy is very, very close to my heart, and that is trying to stem the school to prison pipeline. And it gives me an opportunity to invite people to go out and to see what we're doing. And you can see it on the big screen. We now have a movie out called For Akeem, which is at the 24-1 Cinema right there on page. And it tells a story about compassion. It talks about school. It talks about all of the issues surrounding criminal justice as it relates to juveniles. But by and large, what it really does, it talks about compassion. It talks about how we're able to help a child matriculate and graduate high school. And so this wonderful documentary that started back in 2013, which premiered in March or April of this year at the Berlin, Germany Film Festival, is now a wonderful big-time motion picture. It has been now shown in over 15 countries and all over the country.
For folks who aren't familiar with it, just give us the Cliff Notes version of what the Concept Academy is all about.
The Innovative Concept Academy was established back in 2009, and it was a way to keep children in school and out of court. Long-term suspensions and expulsions were problematic for children in the city of St. Louis. In fact, in 2011, the Civil Rights Commission reported that St. Louis City was the worst offender for suspending and expelling middle school-aged children. My hope was to keep them in school and to keep them out of court.
The education component to all of this is absolutely critical. We've talked off the air, and this is probably one of the most important building blocks for young people we have today, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Is there a story that specifically stands out as a success story from the Academy?
Oh, absolutely. Dajay Shelton, who is a young lady that is featured in the story For Akeem. And so when we judge our children, we evaluate them differently. Dajay, also known as Boonie, just wanted to graduate, irrespective of her circumstances. She got pregnant, her father in prison, her mom dropped out of school. So this cycle of ignorance, a cycle of violence. So she was on these cycles, and she managed to get herself off the cycle and graduate and hopefully become a better person.
We are familiar with Dajay. We've done programs relating to her situation and quite a remarkable young person, needless to say. We have a caller here who wants to talk to Jimmy Edwards. Let's bring in Ron calling from Ferguson. Go ahead, Ron. Are you there? I guess not. I guess Ron is not there. We talked also off the air about the treatment of young people in our jails.
I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we take children and we lock them up in facilities for low-level misdemeanors and non-victim low-level felonies. The jury formality of learning continues irrespective of whether a child is locked up in a penal institution or whether a child is in school. It begs the question, how do you want that child back in our community? They all return to the community. Do you want them back with a more sophisticated criminal mind because we've chosen to lock them up on $2.50 worth of marijuana? Or do you want them back in our community with a better understanding of what it means to be law-abiding or what it means to be respectful because we've chosen to put them in the appropriate educational program where we can teach them how to be decent.
Right. I think we've got Ron and Ferguson with us now, and let's try him one more time. Ron, are you with us?
Yes. I hope that there's some type of process to do some type of psychological profile on these new recruits that come in. I think that's where the problem lies at. The community, the police department, the fire department should represent the community. That would help significantly. And I got a radical idea. I believe that all judges and prosecutors need to have a lie detector test performed on each case that they're involved in, because I do not trust any individual's judgment or biases when it comes to my long-term future. And there's only one way to assure that, because we've known for 300 years that the justice system has not been fair to African Americans. And that's the only thing I can think of that helps ensure that we look at people like Eleanor Reasonover, who the prosecutor, the judge, and everybody else knew that the witnesses were lying and kept it secret. So somebody revealed it 10 years later, and they still were never prosecuted. And she spent almost 15 years in jail and almost got a death penalty.
Okay, Ron, I'm going to stop you there because time's getting away, and I want the judge to respond to particularly your comment with regard to screening police officers' psychological testing.
Ron, thanks a lot for your comments and certainly for your questions. I agree that police officers should be screened every single year, not only for mental health conditions or PTSD-type circumstances, but they should also be screened for purposes of implicit biases. I think every single year, officers should be given an update on policing, an update on the law. Education certainly is the key to helping to restore some confidence back in policing in our city. Now, with respect to judges, I'm going to kick that can down the road, and I can only tell you that every single day that I sit on the bench in the city of St. Louis for the last 25 years, I've always tried to do the right thing. And I expect the same from my colleagues in the city of St. Louis. And it doesn't always happen.
I'll take one more call. This is Jason calling from St. Louis. Jason, go ahead. You're on the air.
I want to say congratulations and welcome. Glad that you are coming in as the new director. I think that will bring some much-needed changes that actually need to take place within the system. I am a corrections officer as well. But one question is, will we be a part of that race? Two is, I do see individuals, young people, as a matter of fact, that are in the dorms that are hopeless and don't have anywhere to go and nothing to do. And, you know, I would like to see personally more programs geared towards the GED classes, basically reintegration. How do we do that, and how will we handle that? Or is that something that's in the works I just don't know about? You know, that's my biggest thing. The pay raise, I ain't worried about. We'll get it if we get it. But the biggest thing I'm concerned about is how are we getting these young people back on the streets to be kind of reinvented and more knowledgeable?
Thank you so much for your comment, and thanks for taking me off the hook on the pay raise issue. I think that you're absolutely right. We have to educate our kids. We have to redirect them, and the only way that we're able to do that is that we're going to have to lean in more heavily on our educational programs. I like programs like the Father Support Center. Certainly, I think that James Clark and what they're doing at Better Family Life, all of those types of programs, I think, are certainly beneficial. The GED programs are critical. And folk always say, well, Judge, you know, why can't we provide some type of vocational training? Why can't they go out and get a job as a woodworker? Well, you have to know some math in order to be a woodworker. And so education is the key to all of this, and you're absolutely right. So we're going to have to try to help these kids who are hopeless. You can't have hope unless we have given it to you. You can't even dream unless we tell you what to dream about, and certainly you're not going to have success unless you're given an opportunity.
Thanks for the call, Jason. It always comes back to education, doesn't it? That seems to be the first big necessary step. Another call, this one from Perry in St. Louis. Perry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Would the judge consider recruiting the former Dallas police chief to come to St. Louis and have Civic Progress pay part of his salary so we don't have to include that for a long term, perhaps $200 from us and something on the side from Civic Progress? He's in the right place to do that.
Well, thank you for your suggestion. I haven't had the benefit of knowing who has applied to be police chief in the city of St. Louis. I understand that perhaps we're down to 20 candidates that have qualified or meet the minimum requirements. I will not have the benefit of knowing who has applied until at or about December the 15th.
Why is it taking so long?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. But, Don, I can guarantee you it won't take me very long.
And you're going to hit the ground running on Monday then. You're being sworn in on Monday, is that correct?
I'm being sworn in Monday at about 10:30. I have meetings with all department heads at 9 a.m., so I will meet with them before I'm even sworn in. So we will go to work. I just simply ask that the employees under the public safety officer work as hard as the public safety director. And so it is my intent to outwork all of them.
You know, in the limited time that we have left here, I think people ought to understand your story a little bit, because I think you can serve as an inspiration to a lot of young people, black and white. Your background, you got off to what might be called a pretty bad start, didn't you?
Well, I was born right here in the city of St. Louis in the shadows of the Pruitt-Igoe housing complex. Every single thing that I got during my adolescence and young adult life was because of the generosity of strangers, every single thing that I got. I attended public schools in the city of St. Louis. I was given an opportunity to go to St. Louis University's undergraduate school and then later to its law school. I love the city of St. Louis. I did not get out of the city of St. Louis until I was 22 years old, and I went to the Esquire Theater out in Clayton, Missouri. And so my entire life, every single thing that I'm about, every bone deep in my heart is about the city of St. Louis. And it breaks my heart when there's inequitable treatment or disparate treatment. We have to fix that. And so I will do the very best that I can do every single day to calm our city down. We all love our city. It's a wonderful city. And I can tell you the sky is not falling in the city of St. Louis, but we're going to fix the problems that we have.
You spoke of the generosity of people along the way. What kind of generosity are we talking about?
Well, certainly. I grew up with four siblings, a single mom. She didn't have the money to buy food or bedding, and certainly we did not have a vehicle. We didn't have clothing. And so people stepped up to help us. And I believe that that's the reason I try to do as much as I can do for others. And that was internalized when I attended St. Louis University. And I truly understood that it is what I do for others that matters most.
Inspiring people through your own story, Jimmy Edwards. Thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations once again on the job. And we certainly hope you do all the things you say you want to do. Hope you can do them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so very much, Tom.
Judge Jimmy Edwards, the new public safety director, as of Monday, next Monday, for the city of St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.